Today she is Masechta Kitten Daf Nun Aleph. We will begin on Daf Nun on the Bay is the bottom line. Our Gemara begins where we left off with our previous year, with Rav Chanina teaching us that although we know one of the halachas that come up frequently in Shas is the concept of Nechasim Mishabadim, that if I borrow money, then all of my assets that I have at the moment of the loan become mishubadim, become obligated to that, become mortgaged. There's a lien on those. The question is, what does that lien cover and what does that lien not cover? So Rav Chanina, the Gemara says, it covers the value of the asset. But if there were payers, if you bought this asset from me and now it's taken away from you, and not only do you lose the actual asset, but you lose the payris, the whatever you did to improve that asset, or whatever payris there are on that asset, the halacha teaches us that that is not included in what the person is obligated to get. That is not included in the rule of Nechasim Mishabadim. And Rav Chanina explained that the reason why it's not included in the rule of Nechasim Mishabadim is because when somebody buys an asset that has a lien on it, he knows exactly what he's risking. He knows how much that asset is worth, and he knows what he's risking. But payris is something that isn't identified and predetermined. Since payris aren't identified and predetermined, that's why the halacha is very, very different. So says the Gemara. Ask the Gemara. Now that we learned this halacha, that it's different when the asset has to be predetermined to have the din of Nechasim Mishabadim apply to it. So now, what does a Chanina require? Does it require ksuvim uksuvim bayim, that we should know the exact value and they should also be written into a document? Or dilma, is it satisfactory that it should be ksuvim, that we should know what is the amount that is the amount that you'll be held responsible for, even though that they are not written in a document? That's the Gemara's question. How much of a predetermination is required for the halacha of Nechasim Mishabadim? The Achrayim discuss, the Gemara's question is, do you have to have ksuvim? You have to have it predetermined and also written. What is the halacha if it's ksuvim, if it's written, that you take on that obligation, but it's not ksuvim, but it's not a predetermined amount? The Maram Shif says that if you have ksuvim, if you have ksuvim, once it's written, then even if it's not ksuvim, but the fact that you took on this obligation, that is enough to be obligate yourself. So the halacha is that a father, when he dies, his daughters that he left over, his single daughters that he left over, are still supported from his estate. So says the Gemara, somebody passed away, he left over two daughters and a son. And the halacha is that the estate has to marry off the daughter. The amount the state has to spend on giving the daughter is Isur Nechasim. The Gemara Masechet Ksuvos discusses what does that mean? 10%? Does that mean that there's a firm number of 10%? Or does it mean because we don't know what the father would have spent on the wedding? But if we had a experience how much the father had already married off a daughter and what he had spent on the wedding, maybe then the halacha would be that we just spend what he would have spent. There's an opinion that says we would spend what the father spent, provided that it's not more than 10%. But again, the simple rule is that 10% of the estate is used to marry off the daughter. And again, and there's a discussion also, what does that mean? If there are a number of daughters, does it mean that the first daughter gets 10% and the second daughter gets 10% of what's left? Or does it mean that we look at how many daughters there are, and then we look at that all together, and we take a number, and we divide it amongst those daughters? But whatever the facts are, the daughter is entitled to 10% for her marriage. And then, the first daughter got married, gave her 10%. And the second daughter didn't have an opportunity to get her 10% at Shemesa Ben, until the son died. Now that the son died, so the two daughters are the Yarshim of this estate. The son died without any children, and the two sisters, since there are no sons, are the Yarshim of their father's estate. And now the question is, what do we do? Do we say that the second daughter is entitled to her 10% before we divide up the estate, and then after what's left over, we'll divide the estate? Or is the halacha that the point of getting the 10% is that she should have what to have get married from? But this woman won't have any of that problem because she's going to be getting half the Yerusha. Rav Yochanan, so Rav Yochanan says, Shnei Vitra. The second one gives up her 10% because the entire purpose of the Issa Nechasim was that she should have from what to get married. But now that Baruch Hashem, she has what to get married from because she got half the estate, there's no reason to give it a 10%. Vamalei Rav Chanina. Rav Chanina said to Rav Yochanan, is that fair? Because the first daughter got married before this happened, and she didn't get, and she got 10%, and the second daughter did not get married before this happened, she should not get that, her 10%? Asks Rav Chanina to Rav Yochanan, didn't Chazal teach us, Gal Mizach Amru, Mitzin Lefanos Ve Mitzin Lemazoinis, that if the brother sold off the assets, now we have the situation that we've been discussing in our shir, where we have people who bought those assets. What do the sisters have a right to take from those assets? And what do the sisters not have a right to take from those assets? So the halacha is, Metzin Lepanosa, the 10% that they're entitled to for marriage purposes, they're entitled to, Ve Metzin Lemazoinis. But for day-to-day support, they don't get from there. So we see that this Issa Nechasim is a very strong enactment of Chazal. Chazal was so concerned about the Issa Nechasim that they give it to the second, that even if the brother sold off the assets, they're not going to lose the Issa Nechasim. So ask the Gemara, why over here are you saying that the second daughter was so quick to give up the Issa Nechasim? That Amr Shnei Vitra, says the Gemara, what's the point? But Panosa, to make a katzva, the Panosa is the 10%. So it's a finite number. But it's Mechtav Lektivi. It wasn't written into any document, the Kometzia, and yet we see that the daughter is entitled to it, as Rabbi Yochanan just said. So isn't this a raya, that even though something is just ketsuvim, as long as it's set aside, the fact that it's not put into any document, because as we're learning here, it's only a takanas chazal, still entitles her to it. Answers the Gemara, Shani Panosa. That's not a legitimate question. The kivan, this lekola, since when the father dies, everybody knows that if he left over daughters, those daughters are entitled to the Issa Nechasim. For Panosa, so it's commanded Ksividami, the halacha views it as if it's written in the shtar. But that's not a raya to a regular business transaction. The Mishnah speaks of, there's a Mishnah that speaks about a woman who got married, and she had a daughter from a previous marriage. And this new husband obligated himself to support the daughter of his wife for 5 years. Then this husband divorced his wife, and she got married to another man. And that other man also obligated to support his wife's daughter for 5 years. And now both of these men died during these 5 years. So says the Gemara, Masra of Nu Mem Noyach. The Mishnah Masechta Ksubas Daf Kuf Aleph Amud Beis teaches us, Mesu, if the husband, these husbands died, that means the first husband that divorced her and the second husband died, but same the Zonis Menchas Menechayim. The halach is that the daughters that they had taken upon themselves that they are going to support get supported from any assets that these men left. For he, the same, their own daughters, the Zonis Menchas Menechayim, real daughters only get supported from whatever assets the father who died left over. For he and this girl, Nazanis Mechasim Neshabadim, she has a stronger right because she's Kabbalah's Chayiv. So we see that the fact that this man, that these men took on these obligations, and it's a very clear obligation what they took on the support of these daughters. The halacha is that they collect from the Chasim Neshabadim, even though it's not written in the Shtar. And Rashi explains that it's considered the Chasim Ketzuvim because we know exactly how much they're going to be, how much the cost of supporting these girls will be. So the Rashba asks Rashi, well, how can we say that support is considered, the support of these girls is considered Dover Ketzuv? Don't we know that the price of mezonos, the price of food, fluctuates? So says the Rashba that indeed the question of the Gemara is not on the opinion that says that if you don't have kotsuv, it's not, you don't collect from the Chasim Shabadim. The question, if you don't have kotsuv, you don't collect from the Chasim Shabadim. What the Gemara means to say is that this is a situation that it's not kotsuv and it's not kotsuv. It's nothing. And yet we see from here that you could collect from the Chasim Shabadim. Answers the Gemara, Hachimai Skinen, this is a different situation. The Gemara's situation is that there was a kinyan. And since there was a kinyan, it's considered like it's kosov. And as I said earlier, once it's kosov, everybody agrees that you're entitled to take from the nechasim mishabadim. Ihochi asked the Gemara, if we're talking about a case that was a kinyan, and that's why these girls are entitled to collect from this girl who from a previous marriage is entitled to collect, then the halacha should be for the bonos nami. Says the Gemara, kishana lezer v'loy kana lezer. The man did a kinyan for his wife's children, but he didn't make a kinyan for his own children. Ask the Gemara, my pascha, why do we understand that he made a kinyan for his wife's daughter, but not for his own daughter? Says the Gemara, bas ishtar d'habishas kinyan. What the Gemara is saying is that he's marrying this woman. And as we explained, this woman had a daughter from a previous marriage. And he undertook to support her. So that's something that you could make a kinyan for. Mahalei kinyan. Bitta delahavi b'shas kinyan. When a man marries a woman, and he doesn't have any daughters yet. So you can't make a kinyan with a person who doesn't exist yet. That's why lemehanya kinyan. And that's why it's understandable why there was a kinyan with his wife's daughter, but there was no dinyan kinyan with his own daughter. Says the Gemara, Mila Eskin Davat Havai Baskinin. Why couldn't we explain that when he married his wife, he had his wife's daughter who he accepted the responsibility of supporting, and he had his own daughters who he's supporting? Vechidami, what is the case that the Gershav Ahadra, that his wife had a daughter, and his wife got was married to a man, got divorced, and he obligated himself to marry his wife's to support his wife's daughter. But he also had his own children, and he undertook to support his own children. So why is the obligation to his wife's daughter stronger than his obligation to his own daughter? A kinyan, whatever transaction, whatever prenuptial agreements he would have made, would include his own children, says the Gemara. The Gemara says, the obligation to support your own daughter doesn't need a kinyan and doesn't need a deal. There's a Tanai Bezdin that one is obligated to support his own children. Therefore, even if you made a kinyan, the kinyan would be meaningless. Bas Ishtoi, who you're not obligated to support your wife's daughter, the labatnai bezdin kachla, it's only because you accepted upon yourself to support her. That's why mahanalei kinyan. Ask the Gemara v'chimigra gara. Ask the Gemara, because your daughter is entitled support because of the tanai bezdin, Does that mean that a kinyan would be meaningless? Answers the Gemara, El bita kivin de b'tnai bez de kachlo. Since a daughter's right to a father's assets is a very strong right, because as we're learning, it's a tanai bezdin, it's something that Chazal instituted on her behalf, emetzrara atrasa. We always have to be concerned that she already got the money for her support from beforehand. And since she already got the support from beforehand, she is not entitled to take the money from the Nechos Meshabadim. We have to protect the Nechos Meshabadim. However, the daughter of one's wife, where your level of responsibility to her and your level of commitment to her is obviously much less, so there's no concern that you would have given her money that you weren't obligated to give. So if she's entitled to support, she could go after the Nechos Meshabadim. Our Gemara just taught us the difference. If there was a kinyan, it wasn't a kinyan. The Cheshuk Yechemed of Yitzhak Zilberstein Shlita discusses an interesting shaila. He says there was somebody whose daughter got engaged, and at the time of engagement, he promised that he's going to buy her an apartment, or he's going to give a certain amount of money towards helping her getting in a marriage. In the dunya, an apartment. And then terrible tragedy happened. He went bankrupt before he could buy the apartment or whatever other obligation he had undertaken. And the question Rabbi Zuck Zilberstein asks is, he had undertaken this obligation, but obviously he had undertaken this obligation only because he had the application, the financial ability to honor this obligation. Now, because unfortunately he went bankrupt and he can't keep up with that obligation, how does the halacha view this situation? So he uses our Gemara as the answer to that question. Our Gemara just said there's a difference of kana b'yadai, there's a difference if there was a kinyan or if there was no kinyan. So he suggests that's the way to look at our issue. If there was a kinyan by this man, even though, of course, and we could certainly make this point, that if the other side is understanding and recognizes and realizes that because it was beyond his control, he lost his money, and they're going to be understanding and not obligate him to pay, that's fantastic. But if they're not willing to give up and they had made a kinyan, then he's going to be held responsible. However, if there was no kinyan, so as we're learning in our Gemara, if there's no kinyan, it's not as strong. And therefore, if these circumstances came up, which were beyond his control, he would be exempt. Toshma, says the Gemara, Amram Nosan, Amosai, when did we learn the halacha that we learned in our Mishnah, that we don't collect payers from the Nechos Meshabadim? Bizman shekodem mecha shosheni l'shifcha shorishin. That means somebody bought this property before the person that somebody had bought the property before the first buyer had improved the property that was stolen. Again, the case that we had been discussing in our previous shiurim is that somebody had stolen a property, sold that property, and then sold another property. And then the first sale was discovered that the property that he had sold was the property that he had sold was property that was stolen, and it was returned to the person from whom it was stolen. And since it was returned to the person from whom it was stolen, he goes now, the person who had bought the property goes after the buyer of the second property. And that's when the halacha is that he only could collect the property but not the payers. But now tells us the Gemara that this is only in a case where the second person had bought the property before the first person who had bought the stolen property had improved it. If the first person who had bought the stolen property had improved it before the second person even brought his property, so then he collects even the improvements min chasim shabadim. So we see, says the Gemara, that what is the consideration? Because this obligation wasn't there at the time of the sale, but has nothing to do with ksuvim or ketsuvim. Answers the Gemara, we have to say, tanaihi. There's a machloikus to noim. B'tanya emet zin lechilas peres l'shvach kabos l'mozun isha b'abodas melchosim shabodim v'mnei tikkur oil l'fisha en k'suvim. So here this opinion clearly says that the issue is that it had to be written and predetermined. Amar v'yesu chima tikkur oil m'yesh b'zu. What's the pshat that we need? The tikkun oil of aloy and ketsuvim. So we see these tanoim consider ketsuvim and kesuvim the important factors. We learned in our Mishnah. So somebody found something that was lost. And he came back to the person who lost it. And he tells him, I found your lost object. And the person who lost it says to him, well, you're not returning to me everything that you found. So the halacha is, and he's saying, well, this is all I found. So there's a halacha that comes up also often in Shas. The halacha that the Torah says, Moed v'miktsis, if somebody admits partially, the halacha is Yeshava, he should swear. So given that that's the halacha, in this case where I found something, and I'm admitting to partial, not to the whole thing, the halacha is I ought to have to swear that this is all I found. However, Chazal instituted b'nei tikkun olam, that I who found something should not have to swear. Because if by picking it up and wanting to return it, which is of course the right thing to do, what's going to happen is I'm going to have to swear. And as we often learn, people are obviously very, very reluctant to swear. So I'm never going to want to return anything. And because of that, Chazal said that even though this could be considered a case of Moed v'miktsis, the halacha is I don't have to swear. So we learned in the Mishnah, v'amotz metziah, if I find something lo yeshava, I need not swear. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, when is that the halacha? If somebody lost two wallets that were attached to each other, and he made an announcement that he lost these two wallets, and he gave simonim, and now somebody comes along and says, I found one of the wallets. So the person who lost it says that you're a moed v'miktsis. You tell me who found it. Shnei ksisim kshur mitzasa. You found two wallets. V'ala oimer. And I say lo mitzasi ala echad. I only found one. Then the halacha is that I have to swear it moed v'miktsis. However, if the announcement was shnei shkshurim kshur mitzasa, I lost two oxen. And I come and I find one axe, and I say, I only found one, ein nishba. So the obvious question is, why in the first case of the wallets do I have to swear, I the finder? And why in the second case need I not swear? Answers the Gemara, Shvarim menatchim adadi. It's common that oxen get detached. And therefore, the person cannot legitimately claim, you must have found both of my oxen. Kisen, but wallets, they don't just get detached, and therefore you have a legitimate claim, where's the other wallet? Says the Gemara, if you say to me you found two oxen that were tied together, and I say that I did indeed find the two oxen, but I claim, I already gave you back one of them, that's considered a situation of moed v'miktsis. Ask the Gemara, but what about what we just quoted from our Mishnah? Rav Yitzchak Lesley, Amotz Mitzir, Lo Yishavim, Menei Tikkun Olam. What about the issue of Tikkun Olam? Hu D'Amar, answers the Gemara, Rav Yitzchak holds like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, that indeed, that the halacha is, that a Meshev Aveda, who makes a claim, has to, and there's a claim made against him, has to swear. The Tanya, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Omer, sometimes a person has to swear even based on his own claim. Ketzad. The halacha is that a malva dies, and the loiva says to the son of the malva, "Mana lev icha biyadi, I owed your father $100, v'chalte pras, and I already gave him back $50, harei zeh nishba." That's a case that he has to swear. V'zeh shenishba adam atanas atzmai. Nobody made any claim against me. Not only did not anybody make any claim against me, they couldn't have made a claim against me, because how's the son to know for sure what happened with his father? This person who comes on his own volition and says this is what the history I have with your father. I owed him 100 and I paid him 50. So I'm a Meshur Aveda. He didn't know anything, and that's why I'm Potter. Says the Gemara. Rabbi Elazar ben asked the Gemara. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, less the Meshur Aveda Potter. So in other words, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is not agreeing to the concept of Meshur Aveda. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Tana Katan. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is speaking about when the son of the Malva is a Katan. And there, the Katan comes to the Loiv and says that you owed my father money. And he says, well, I paid 50 and I owed 50. That's where Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov will say that he has to swear. However, that's in a case where the Malva, or the son of the Malva, is saying, you certainly owe me the money. But in a case where it's not a bari, the halach is, you have to swear. Says the Gemara, Katan, Midi Meshash. And that's why Katan makes a claim, I have to swear. Ask the Gemara, Katan, Midi Meshash, Ispe. Is the claim of the Katan value? For Katan, how we learned the Masech the Shavuos, Einish Bon Altan, is Chayr Shait for Katan? Says the Gemara, my Katan, what is the definition of Katan here? There's really a Godel. So if that's the case, ask the Gemara, my Karlai Katan. Why is he being called a Katan? Says the Gemara, L'gav Emil Adaviv Katan Hu. As far as father's affairs are concerned, he's a cotton because he doesn't know exactly what I'm with his father. Yehachi, but ask the Gemara a different question. The Braisa began by saying, Pamish Nishba Adam Atanis Atzmai, that I initiated this claim. I didn't initiate it. Tanis Achermi, the Yosem came with this claim. And it says, Gemara, what the Braisa means, Tanis Achermi, was somebody else made a claim, and I made, Vaidos Atzmai, I made a partial admission. Says the Gemara, so that's not a unique situation. All situations are Moedim and Mixes. A Kula Tanos Anami are a situation of Tanis Acherim, Vados Atzman Ninu. Says the Gemara, Ella, says the Gemara, that we have to go back to our original understanding. That Tana Cotton, that the one that made the claim against me was a Cotton. I, the Gemara, ask that the Mishnah Masech the Shavuos teaches us, Einish Bon Al Shavuos Cotton, A Tanis Cotton. That's only when he's making a claim about his own assets. Because the Torah says, where does the Torah teach us the parasha of Moedim and Mixas? Because the Pasuk says, Kitin ish al-re'ayu kesef o'kelem lishmar. And the Gemara Masech Baba Kamadav Kuvav al-Mabez teaches us, ish v'loi cotton. But in this case, the cotton is not making the claim on his own asset. He's making a claim regarding his father's assets. And when he's making a claim about the father's assets, then even though he himself actually is a cotton, the halacha is that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says you do swear, and Rabbanan hold you don't swear, because the machlokes is over what Rava taught us, with the Rava kamifkli. Kedama Rava, because Rava teaches us a very fundamental halacha when we speak about moedim and mixes. And that is, the name of Amr Tari moedim and mixes tani yeshava. If anything, we would maybe think that somebody who's a Moedim Amixis should not have to swear. And the reason why one would say that somebody who's a Moedim Amixis doesn't have to swear is because one could say, I'm a very honest person. I didn't have to admit to anything. I went and I admitted that I paid you half. And that's where the Torah says that you have to swear. In other words, Midaraisa, if somebody comes and makes a claim to me that I owe him money, and I claim that I don't owe you any money, Hamaitzi Mechaveri Olav Araya, I don't have to swear. I'm exempt. Because I admitted that I owe you half, that's where the Torah says that I have to swear. So of course that's somewhat difficult to understand. If I admitted that I owe you, isn't that a proof that I'm an honest person? Says the Gemara, because Chazaka ain't Adam made the fun of him Leichayv. If somebody owes somebody else's money, there's a chazaka that he wouldn't deny that he owes him any money. Why? Because the person did me a favor. He lent me money. So how could I have the chutzpah after this person lent me money to turn around and say, I don't owe you anything? The haibakul by lemichrei, if he wants to deny it. Why doesn't he deny it? Shum the ain other maze, right? The like kafri, why doesn't he deny it? Shum the ain other maze panabifnei ba'al chayvi. So if that's the case, that I respect and understand that I owe you money, the kula by delay delay. I really should have to admit, I really should say, yes, I owe you the money. Why doesn't he do so? The high delay I delay, because the shtumut hudum come shtamitle. Because he wants to say, well, I already paid you half. I only owe you half. Give me a little more time. Suffer, because his thinking is, adahavale zuzi upranile. Until, like this, I'm buying some time by saying that I already paid you back half. I'm able to buy myself some time. Vam rachmana, that's why Tyra says, since this person begins with all this rationalization, ramish fuale, you have to swear, tana moedim amuktsis. Because people don't like to swear falsely, and I admit to the truth. So Rav Elazar ben Yaakov suffer that this type of psychology, there's no difference, loishna above, loishna benoit. There's no difference between the malva, if I'm speaking to the malva himself or to his son. The loiva ain't amazed, is not going to have the chutzpah to say something which is an outright lie. Vilkach, and therefore lav meshev aveda, who is not considered a meshev aveda. Rabbanim savri boy, who the ain't amazed, the malva who did me a favor and lent me money, I won't speak to that way. Av benoi meis. Medloi meis, if I didn't say that I don't owe you money, meish aveidu, who I must be saying the truth. So as we learned, the halacha, amoid of a mixus, the Gemara, the Masech of Abakama, explains that we learn it from the pasuk, ki hu zeh, who, and the kilis yitzchak, Sefer Kilas Yitzchak, the Parshas Mishpatim, says that we look at these two words, who and ze, they're very different types of words. Who is I'm not speaking directly. Ze is I'm speaking directly. So he explains the what is the pasuk teaching us? That when a person asks somebody for the money that he owes him, and he denies owing any money, the Beis Din has no way of knowing who's saying the truth. There's a who. It's a situation that the truth is hidden from Beis Din. But if there's a zeh, the part that I'm admitting to, that is the part that is known to Beis Din. And that's what the pasuk means. Ashiyoy mikua zeh, where we have a portion which is who, which we don't know what to do with, and we have a portion which is zeh, which we do know what is the status. That's where the Torah says, Adol akim yovet vashneim, this is brought to Beis Din, and Beis Din says, I have to swear. So the Kehilas Yitzchak continues to explain that the Pasuk says in Shmuel, when Shmuel came to anoint Shaul to be a melech, the Pasuk says, V'yishlach v'yiveyu, v'hu admoni im yifei anayim, v'toiv roi, v'yoyim Hashem kum mashcheyu kihu ki zehu. What is the Pasuk trying to say, as he says, with the words ki zehu? So he says that the pasuk is talking about David HaMelech. So he explains that on one hand, he saw that David HaMelech was redheaded, had a red complexion. And that usually is a sign of a Shofech Damim. So the HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, ki yifei einayim. Yes, he maybe has the tendency of doing strong action, but he only does it when Beis Din tells him to do. When you see the Zeh, when you see in him this personality, you should know that it's not only Zeh. There's a part of his personality which is who, which is, there's a part that's Zeh, there's a part that you see, and there's a part that's who, that's visible, and the visible part is that you see that he has this personality, but there's the hidden that he only does what Beis Din tells him to do. The Rambam discusses in his halachas, but speaking in Moedim and Mixus, what would be the halacha if the malva says that the loan is due and the loiva says that it's not due for another 10 days? The Rambam says if the malva is able to bring an eid echad to testify that the loiva is already due, the loiva has to swear that what he say that it's not yet due. The Magen Mishnah says, I don't know where the Rambam takes this halacha from. Says the Ktzais that our Gemara is the source for the Pesach of the Rambam. Because says the Ktzais, Rav explained that what's the reason for a person who's might have a mixus to have to swear? Because what he's really just trying to do is delaying payment of the debt. Is says the tzais, if delaying payment of a debt is not significant enough to make you make a shvua, then the Torah would have never made us make a might of a, then there would be no debt of a might of a mixus. Because our Gemara says the tzais is a proof that the whole might of a mixus is only just to buy time. The Ksam Sofer disagrees that the Ksam Sofer says that the point of Maidva Mixus is not just to make sure that the Malva gets his money on time, but also to make sure that the Malva should get his money. Because he says, if the Loiva is denying the debt just to be able to buy time, then the halacha is that his Yarshim should not have to pay. Because the Yarshim may say there was no debt. The fact, says the Magen Mishnah, the fact that the debtor admitted that he owes the money, so maybe once you admitted the money, you owe the money, so you haven't accomplished anything for your Yarshim. So we see it has nothing to do with pushing it off, it has to do just with the actual debt.